where I live.
Intruder alert, intruder alert.
Welcome aboard, Captain. Fighter pilots needed in Sector Wars. Play Astro Blaster.
R2 droid, increase the power.
Welcome back, friends, to a new episode of the Diary of an Arcade Employee podcast. I'm your host, Vic Sage, and I hope you have all been having a safe and happy holiday. I want to thank you for bearing with me on the delay of this very episode. This should have come out back in November, but I'm afraid that my work schedule and such, like my computer dying on me, prevented me from getting it put together in time. On today's show, we're going to be talking about Atari's 1981 fixed shooter masterpiece, Centipede. As I just mentioned, Centipede was released into the wilds of the arcades back in 1981. By this point, Atari already had an impressive list of arcade hits under their belts, such as 1972's Pong, Sprint 2, and Outlaw, as well as Breakout in 76, Asteroids in 79, and then its sequel in 1980. Also in that year, Atari released one of my personal favorites, Missile Command. Centipede was released in June of 1981, and it is said a single unit for the upright version of the game, at that time, cost $1,995. In total, Atari has been said to have manufactured a little over 46,000 arcade cabinets for the game. I suppose that is one way to say it was incredibly popular. Centipede itself was co-created by Donna Bailey and Ed Logg. Ed is something of a legend in the video game industry, having had a hand in such games as Super Breakout, Video Pinball, Asteroids, Gauntlet, and its sequel Gauntlet 2, Millipede, the 1982 sequel to Centipede, as well as 1987's Zybots, to name a few of those classic titles. Donna Bailey was the first woman in Atari's coin-op division. Actually, when she left in 1982, she was still the only female programmer. Donna came to work at Atari while living in Santa Barbara. Thanks to a friend who happened to own a record store, she became a fan of the 80s band The Pretenders. In particular, with their debut album from January of 1980 that had a track entitled Space Invader. An instrumental song that, as you might guess, was inspired by and happens to contain sound effects from Taito's 1978 arcade hit. Now, apparently, Donna had not played the game at this point, nor does it seem she even knew what a video game was at the time. And while it seems she never warmed up to Space Invaders, she has mentioned that she did dig the likes of Galaga. At the time, Bailey was working at General Motors and had been trained in assembly language programming. While playing that first game, she has said during a video interview with Motherboard that while she quickly lost her lives, she realized the display looked similar to the one she worked with at GM. So, in 1980, she left General Motors and joined up with Atari. And it sounds like, from all accounts, it was a hit-the-ground-running situation, an environment where you had to learn as you go. As for how she came up with the idea for Centipede, Donna has said that there was a notebook that had about 30 ideas jotted down for future game projects, and one stood out for her. With most of the others involving war of some kind, there was a description of an insect making its way down to the bottom of the game screen, with a player having to shoot and destroy it piece by piece. Furthermore, in a 1982 public service tape by Atari entitled Video Games, A Public Perspective, Bailey said,
I'm really interested in the bizarre quality of life on Earth, but not necessarily the everyday business. I'm really, like, Centipedes is sort of, and it came out sort of because I don't like spiders. That's a lot of how that happened. And the spider in that is very cartoonish and mischievous and just irritating, really. And I liked, you know, having my way over a spider.
Atari produced that public service tape in an effort to alleviate the concerns from parent and church groups about the almost overwhelming popularity of video games at the time. Not that much has changed in that fear, I suppose. In a 1983 interview in Video Games Magazine with Ann Kruger, Bailey pointed out in regards to how the game looked different than others on the arcade floor, quote, "I really like pastels, which is why there's so many pinks and greens and violets in Centipede. I really wanted it to look different, to be visually arresting. I think that's a new emphasis in games," end quote. Ed Logg, in that same article, made sure to mention that the game itself was designed for the women's market, and it was Donna's vision that helped to make it stand out. I will, of course, be sure to link that fascinating article on the Retroist site for this podcast. The whole article was written to help shine a spotlight on how few women were actually in the video game industry on the programming side, back in 83. As I mentioned previously, Donna left Atari in 82 to join up with Vidia, which had been founded by three ex-Atari employees and would become Sente Technologies. Nolan Bushnell purchased the company in 1983 for a part of his Chuck E. Cheese Pizza Time Theater Corporation. Interestingly enough, friends, Bailey would end up settling down very near to my neck of the woods, teaching rhetoric and writing at the University of Arkansas in Little Rock. In fact, in that motherboard video, she visits an arcade. Not the Arcadia Retrocade, sadly enough, but one called Z82 that was located in Sherwood, Arkansas. Donna says it was the first time she had stepped foot in an arcade in nearly 20 years. Sadly, the Z82 Retrocade has closed, but it's reopened under a different name, Vortex, I believe. I'll be sure to include that motherboard video on the Retroist as well. It's only a little more than 5 minutes in length, but it is great to be able to hear from Donna herself on what it was like back in the heyday of Atari. I apologize, friends, if this portion of the episode was a little more info dump than usual. But when we're talking about someone like Donna Bailey, I just felt I needed to share a little more backstory than usual. Now then, Centipede is a fixed shooter, meaning that in this case, the game takes place on a single screen. And while in this game the player is allowed more movement than, say, Space Invaders, they sort of have a small area to move about in. Centipede tasks 1 to 2 players, taking alternate turns, with controlling what on the flyer for the game describes as a gun by way of Atari's legendary trackball. And yes, when I first encountered Centipede, not at the Showbiz Pizza of my youth, but at another arcade I've talked about called Games People Play, I did have moments where I pinched my hand while playing it. But thankfully, nothing as traumatic as what I described on the Crystal Castle episode. For myself, I always thought that you were controlling some kind of creature in the Forest of Mushrooms. I never looked at it as controlling a gun or a cannon. It wouldn't be until 1982, when Centipede was ported to the Atari 2600, that we actually got something of a backstory for the game, courtesy of the DC Comics book packaged with it. I'll talk about that a bit later. In Centipede, the player can move freely about in any direction, but only within the bottom third of the screen. I've heard that the development team had originally intended for Centipede to have a joystick, but the truth of the matter is that the trackball is the only way to go. If you are skilled enough, there are many, many times in the game that you can avoid defeat with a deft hand on that control. Swinging back from a rampaging spider and back in time to blast a centipede segment. While the trackball allows for some amazing on-the-fly movement to avoid the various enemies in the game. Obviously, if you come in contact with one, you will lose a life. This especially becomes an issue in later stages of the game, when segments of the centipede are running loose at the bottom of the screen and multiplying. Thankfully, you do have a way to fight back, and in this case, it's a fire button. And by pressing it, the player will launch a shot upwards. Although, if you hold the fire button down, it will allow you to just fire repeatedly. Having said that though, there are some strategies for Centipede where you will want to watch what your shots are hitting. The player's main foe in the game is the titular Centipede, who will appear at the top of the screen and attempt to wind its way down through the forest of mushrooms. Its goal is to reach the bottom of the screen and cost the player a life in the process. How it does this, though, is when the head of the centipede comes in contact with one of those mushrooms, it will drop down a single level. Then, it will reverse direction, dropping a level when it comes in contact with the mushroom again. This is also true if the centipede makes contact with either the right or left side of the screen. When a player's shot hits a segment of the centipede, it magically becomes a mushroom itself. And unless you hit this enemy in the head or tail end segments, say you hit it in the middle as it's moving across the screen, you've now split the centipede up into two foes. You can see how this becomes a huge issue in the later stages, when it's moving very quickly. If the centipede or an individual segment of this enemy reaches the bottom of the stage, it will spawn an additional segment. That new segment can spawn its own additional segment, and so on. Your area of safety quickly diminishes fast when this happens. Keep in mind, you also have to watch out for that darn spider. For what it's worth, shooting a segment of the centipede gets you 10 points, while taking out the head segments earns you 100 points each. It pays to take careful aim when you are afforded the opportunity. Let's go ahead and talk about that spider next. The esteemed Donna Bailey, in her opinion, might have described this foe as being mischievous or irritating. I say it's the scariest enemy in Centipede. Not because I have a fear of spiders, but because of its almost random movement that has a bad tendency to let it make contact and cost the player a life. The spider will show up from the sides of the screen. Thankfully, there can only be one spider on the screen at a time. It does have the ability to move up and down and will continue to move across the stage until it exits the opposite side of the screen from where it showed up. The problem with this is, of course, in later levels, it moves almost psychotically fast. Now, it only takes a single shot from a player to take out the spider, but its bizarre movement patterns make it a dangerous foe to get close to, which is why, if you take it out when it's almost touched you, you get 900 points. At mid-range, you will nab 600 points, and safely shooting it from a distance earns you 300 points. The spider has one other trick in its bag, and that is, it can destroy mushrooms it comes in contact with, which can cause our next enemy to appear. That would be the flea. This little guy can only move in one direction, and that is straight down like it was fired from a cannon. Its sole purpose is to replace mushrooms that the player might have destroyed. This is triggered when there happens to be less than 5 mushrooms in the bottom of the screen, where the player is able to move about freely. The flea appears to randomly leave 4 mushrooms in its wake as it plummets to the bottom of the screen. It takes 2 shots to dispatch the flea. Worst of all, that first hit, it makes it drop down even faster than before. Of course, you lose a life if it hits you. The flea will keep appearing and dropping down until there are 5 mushrooms in that bottom area of the screen again. Personally, I feel, and this is coming from someone who isn't that good at the game, it's just best to avoid the fleas. Let them get on with their jobs. But if you do take one out, you get 200 points for your efforts. In this mushroom forest, as it were, you have another enemy to contend with. And while it won't physically attack you, its actions can definitely cost a player their life. I'm talking about the dreaded scorpion. The scorpion will appear on either the right or left side of the screen, although never where the player can move about freely at the bottom of the stage. This enemy moves horizontally across the screen, but whatever mushrooms it manages to make contact with, as it does so, becomes poisoned. These tainted mushrooms, besides changing color, have the effect of making any centipede, whether that be a single segment or an entire chain, plummet straight to the bottom into the player's area. You can halt this charge if you manage to blast the head segment of the centipede, but if you aren't quick enough, it means you can find yourself suddenly surrounded by the enemy. So, while the 1,000 points is awesome for taking out the scorpion, it's better that you've just stopped it from poisoning more mushrooms. Which leaves us with the mushrooms themselves. While they can't harm the players directly, it takes 4 shots to wipe out a mushroom, poisoned or otherwise. If you decide to start blasting them off the screen, you'll get 1 point for every destroyed fungi. except for the poison versions. Because when you lose your life, for every poison mushroom that is cleansed by the mushrooms refreshing themselves before the game begins again, a player will get 5 points. It also bears remembering that when you lose your life, all partially destroyed mushrooms are restored as well. Elements of the game will speed up if you break the 60,000 points barrier. The fleas begin to descend faster, and that darn spider's movement will be more concentrated to the areas that the player usually moves in, meaning you do not have as much wiggle room when it's crossing the screen. Speaking of points and scores, Eric Jenner was a well-known high score champion back in the 80s, and was featured on more than a few TV reports and shows. Like this one, where he offers a little advice to Pam Harper in a segment shot in the amusement center in San Francisco on the best way to increase your game time in Centipede.
One last tip, keep your gun as high as possible to get faster fire. Our expert who won the National Centipede Contest last year has his own unique strategy.
I'm trying to clear away all the mushrooms so the centipede will come down slower, and that makes it easier to play.
Most of the time, he doesn't shoot the centipede, only the spiders and fleas.
If you want to play forever, you should play this way.
His strategy must work. His highest score on this game was 1,700,000 points. Good players can get up to 60,000 points.
Eric won the Atari World Championship Centipede Contest back in the fall of 1981. In a Joystick Magazine article from 1983, it goes into detail that Eric only had 3 minutes of game time to attempt to get the highest score possible, which for him was 55,500 points. Which, if you think back on what I've said about scoring, you should definitely be impressed. Joystick Magazine apparently flew Eric out to Chicago so they could interview the young man, and he gave them tips on how to master Centipede. The impressive thing about the article, and I will be sure to link to it, of course, is right up front, it tells you that the tips that Eric shares aren't for the casual Centipede fan. The likes of the tunnel strategy, blob strategy, safety zone strategy, and the trap strategy are for players who can at least smash the 100,000 score. My favorite, by the way, is the tunnel strategy. The player would attempt to create 2 rows of mushrooms, dropped by the fleas, of course, positioned under the 1,000 digits of the high score, leaving one column open that lets the centipede be corralled and comes straight down at the player, who can just keep shooting up through that tunnel and taking the centipede out, each hit becoming a headshot and racking up the points. It's truly remarkable reading and goes to show just how much talent Eric possessed. Since we are on the subject of points, the world record holder for Centipede on tournament setting is Donald Hayes, with 7,750,817 points, verified on April 24th, 2018, taking the spot from G. Ben Carter Jr., who held the title since June 28th, 1986. And for what it's worth, at the Arcadia Retrocade, the high score holder is most definitely Michael Dietrich, with a top score of 407,578 points. Surprisingly, with the popularity of Centipede in the arcades, Atari never made a push to have any of their hit games turned into an animated series like Pac-Man, or the collection of characters on the Saturday Supercade, or even Dragon's Lair. While there were records released for the likes of Asteroids and Missile Command, to name a few, it was 1982's Pac-Man Fever album by Buckner and Garcia that stood out for myself. Centipede made the grade with a song entitled Ode to a Centipede.
The centipede multiplies and divides and comes at you from every side. Faster and faster, roll by roll, he slides through the rocks to get you from below. Oh, centipede, you can't run away. You can't run away.
Obviously, with the popularity of Centipede, it was ported to many of the popular consoles and computers of the time, like the Apple II, Atari 2600 and 5200, as well as the 7800. Centipede was also released on the ColecoVision, and both the Commodore VIC-20 in addition to the Commodore 64. The Intellivision received a home port, which, for some reason, I never knew about. And both the TI-99 and IBM ported the game. In the 90s, Centipede could be found on the various Game Boy handheld systems, as well as the Sega Genesis Arcade Classics compilation in 96. That cartridge also had Missile Command and Pong on it. That same year, the PlayStation released Arcade's Greatest Hits, the Atari Collection 1, which was also made available on the Sega Saturn and the Super Nintendo. And with each new home console, there have been versions made, with 2016 seeing the release of the Atari Flashback Classics Volume 1 on both the Xbox One and PlayStation 4. It also has seen an updated version. Back in 2011, Centipede Infestation was released on the Nintendo Wii and 3DS. The setting this time was a post-apocalyptic world, which is sort of the same setting for the 2017 comic book miniseries from Dynamite Entertainment, a book that was better than it had any right being. Also, in 2017, IDW, who have been known to release some amazing comic books themselves, released a new board game for the property. It is quite a bit more challenging than the one that was released by Milton Bradley back in 1983. The Atari 2600 port of Centipede is pretty amazing, friends. It's still fun to play at the arcade, even without the trackball. I was mentioning a little earlier about how DC Comics gave us a backstory with the 1983 release to the 2600. It was written by Howard Post and Andrew Guttel, with artwork by Post and Robert Smith. Post, who passed away in 2010, was a cartoonist and comic strip artist, as well as working on comic books like DC's Anthro, or Harvey Comics' Hot Stuff the Little Devil, and Wendy the Good Little Witch, among others. The Centipede comic is very much in the vein of his work at Harvey, as the story introduces us to Oliver, the littlest elf who finds himself in a nightmarish situation, where an evil wizard uses his wand to turn the mushrooms in the forest into poisonous toadstools. Worst of all, when Oliver manages to get the wand away from the villain, that wizard uses his hypnotic abilities to turn Oliver's friends, the centipede, spider, scorpion, and flea, against him. So, thanks to this 1983 comic book, we have a much gentler view of what is going on in the game. No longer are the players a gun or cannon, but a little elf using a magic wand to zap their friends back to normal. Definitely a far cry from the truly terrifying side art image used on the Centipede arcade cabinet, right? Now friends, we have something special for you. Normally I would attempt to share a few vintage commercials for your listening pleasure. But this time, we have Jacob Ashley of The Wooden Arcade, who was kind enough to share not only his memories of first playing Centipede, but also of his adventures trying to find an arcade cabinet of his very own.
Hello, Vic, and everyone listening to Diary of an Arcade Employee podcast. I want to thank Vic for giving me the opportunity to tell you my story. My name is Jacob Ashley, and my passion is collecting, fixing, and restoring classic arcade machines. It all started a few years back when me and my best friend Michael Zenner decided to fix up a broken Miss Pac-Man, and from there I was hooked. I needed to find another. But my quest for my next machine was the most important to me. I'd love to share with you one of my earliest and cherished memories of arcade playing. Let me take you back, way back, to my younger days, growing up in the little southern town of Jackson, Michigan. It was the late 80s. I came from a single-parent household, and of course, like many, we didn't have a lot of money. My mom, Maria, worked so hard for us to have the coolest toys, like the new Ghostbuster lineup, Teddy Ruxpin, or the Nintendo Entertainment System, to mention a few. We didn't have a lot, but somehow she made it happen. Like many low-income households, we went to the laundromat to clean our clothes. To pass our time and boredom from staring into the vending machines and spin cycles for hours, my mom would always give me and my brother a few quarters from her laundry money to go play the big video game machine in the corner. As a young child, I will never forget walking up to this machine and seeing this terrifying creature on the side. A giant snarling bug with red eyes and sharp teeth, wrapped beautifully around pink mushrooms with amazing star blasts throughout it. As I dropped my fresh quarter in and looked up to this weird white ball, I noticed the name of the game. Centipede. It's one of my most cherished memories. Being just tall enough to reach the trackball, my small hand slamming the fire button, blasting the centipede before he had a chance to get me. Centipede became my first arcade game, and as a kid it was never about high score as much as it was staying alive. The sounds, the changing colors, and oh man, that side art was just enough to pull me back in every time, and keep asking my mom for a quarter week after week as we frequented the laundromat. Which leads me back to today. I had to find a centipede. It was my first arcade game growing up, and it's also kind of a symbol of my mom's hard work as a single parent to make little sacrifices to make her child happy, even in the bleakest of times. With a quick tip from a friend, I was able to find an original Centipede arcade machine at an antique store in Astoria, Oregon. Me and my buddy Zenner instantly drove out from Portland as quick as we could. We finally made it and walked in. There it was. Centipede! Posted on the front of it was a sign that said, $100, doesn't work. Now, in any circumstance, an arcade machine for $100 is a no-brainer to buy. But in my early collecting days, I thought I'd try to haggle the owner down more. He wasn't having it. He smirked and said, $100. What was I doing? Just pay the man his money and get out of there. So I did. Driving home, I had a sigh of relief. I found one! My game! I had a centipede! I looked back and smiled. When we got it home, we inspected the machine. The monitor didn't work, and some boards were pretty fried, but we eventually got everything working again. I'm proud to say, Centipede is happily working in my home arcade to this day, spending its days with me and my family, Leah and Oliver. It was so fun getting it working again and being able to show my son the game. It was enlightening to watch him play and think, I was his age when I played my first game of Centipede. A true moment in passing down one of the greatest games of all time.
Thank you for sharing that, Jacob. I look forward to your contributions on future episodes. Friends, you might find it interesting to know that the arcade proudly displays some of Jacob's artwork on the walls over our Super Nintendo and N64 section. I'll be sure to post a link to his Etsy store on the Retroist post for this show. At the arcade, Centipede was one of the first games that Shay purchased in his very first auction. It proudly stands on the floor and has Dig Dug to one side with Arabian on the other, reminding new players and old-timers alike why Atari became a household name. It's still incredibly popular, with many of our first-time visitors asking for it after they've walked through the doors. And we owe it all to the likes of Donna Bailey and Ed Logg for realizing that a game was needed that was just a little different than the rest of the games at the time. And friends, I think that about wraps up our Centipede episode. Thank you for taking the time to listen to the show, and yet again, sorry it came out so late. You can find out more about the Arcadia Retrocade by visiting Facebook, or for daily posts, you can check out the Diary of an Arcade Employee podcast Facebook page. I share all manner of vintage arcade and home console fun multiple times a day. Jacob Ashley can be found on Facebook, as well as part of the Kong Club on Facebook. If you're a fan of Donkey Kong, you definitely need to check the group out. If you have any feedback or comments about the podcast, you can always reach me on Facebook or throw me an email at vicsage@retroist.com. You can also find me posting videos of the arcade on my Instagram account, which is simply vicsage_. I, of course, want to thank the Retroist, not just for hosting the show, but for providing a spot on the internet where you can visit throughout the week to find some of the best retro-related articles and podcasts. The Diary of an Arcade Employee is available on iTunes and even Spotify. So if you have a moment, why not subscribe and help us get the word out on the show by leaving a review and some comments? Helping the podcast reach new listeners is always appreciated. Until next time, have a token on me as we listen to a clip of the subject of our next show. This This has been a RetroS production. Thank you for listening, and have a better one. Goodbye.
End of line.